Hello and welcome to another episode of the Shock Doctors Podcast. I'm Jim Smith. And we are the Shock Doctors. In this episode, we're going to be discussing Smile, which is apparently a box office smash, at least graded on the horror curve. Right, yeah, it's very true. Right. Right. Yeah, and yeah, I'm also relatively tepid, just to put it right out there. But you know, there are some things to like and plenty of things not to like, and that's just how it seems to go. And yeah, as far as the broader trend line goes, I know I think I liked Barbarian better than you did, and then I think we were both on the same page basically with the Ty West double feature. We liked them, but we didn't like them maybe as much as we wanted to. Oh no. No. None of that. No thanks. I think that's true. I mean, it's, you know. And granted, I'm speaking as someone who has seen almost as many movies as you have. So I'm not exactly an unbiased observer, but call us snobs, I think it's true. Well, that may very well be television and baseball. But anyway, enough about that. Right. No encumbrances of other interests. So Smile is about a therapist, a young woman who's a therapist in an emergency psychiatric ward at a hospital. And she has another young woman, educated woman apparently, is a PhD candidate, the girl says at one point. And she talks about how there's this thing following her around and smiling at her. And then just a few minutes into their session, she wigs out and carves up her own face and neck while wearing this sort of rictus grin. And things just kind of spiral out of control from there. I'm trying to remember. I think there was a 30-second teaser trailer for this ahead of Maverick. It is a pretty wild pairing. It's just like, here's this horror movie, and here's Top Gun Maverick. But, right. Well, I guess, they're both Paramount movies, and like, Paramount decided, okay, Maverick's going to make a fuck billion dollars. We want to make sure that Smile makes a fuck million dollars. So, we'll just, synergy. Corporate synergy. Whoa, this is news to me. I know nothing about this. That's some That's some William Castle shit right there. I'm gonna have to look into this ball game stunt because this is fascinating. It's our job. Right. Dr. Cal Penn tells her to go home. Right. Apparently, PhD candidates are immune to mental disorders. Tell that to John Nash. Yeah, obviously that's pretty fucking hardcore. It's not just, I mean, obviously it'd be traumatic to watch someone die by suicide in front of you under any circumstances, but when somebody's going at themselves with a claw hammer, that's fucking hardcore. Yeah, Dr. Cotter. Yeah, this scene sounds like it worked for me a little bit better than it did for you. And I don't know if it's just because I had seen the trailer so many times, so I knew the magnitude of the patient's freak out. Okay, yeah, I had seen the trailer multiple times, and yeah, the patient wigging the fuck out. I knew that that was on one end of it, and I just kept waiting. Like, every time she breaks eye contact with Rose, and I'm waiting for her to look back at her, I'm like, every time I'm expecting the freak out, and there's like six or seven times where it doesn't come. So I don't know if it's just one of those weird freak instances where having seen a trailer actually increases rather than decreases the suspense, and obviously the much more conventional version of that where it ruins something is something we're going to get into. I'm going to get into further on down the line. But yeah, I don't know. This scene might have been the highlight of the movie for me. I'm gonna get into this post break, but I think it's just a lot of the direction, and by that I just mean the camera work is aggravating. But yeah. It was a little odd. Right. I feel like I've seen that archetype before in horror movies, maybe even ones that we've done, where it's like the willfully ignorant cop who's just like, I'm gonna tell it like it is, or you know, I don't know what. It's just, it's like nobody, not even assholes, talk like that. What the hell is this? It is Donnie Wahlberg in Dead Silence. I don't really remember anything about his character, but if you tell me he was like that in that movie, I'll believe it. Right, right. Well, and it was enough to make me wonder, like, why you clearly hate these people? Why are you out to dinner with them? And then we find out that the woman in the couple is actually her sister. So that's that. There's familial obligation there. But yeah, the sister and the sister's husband are just complete shitheads. Like, the husband makes some crack about, why be a doctor if you can't become filthy rich or something? It's like, shut the fuck up. Who are you? No. The husband, on the other hand, is just a dickhead. You're going to die. I wish right now I had Bill Hader's powers of Alan Alda impersonation. Yeah, it's pretty great. Right. I don't think that first one is noticeably pitched down. I think either the next one or certainly the one after that, they kick it into gear, and by the end, it's just preposterous. But I think this one is relatively normal. Was just reading the same page of text, really. I thought there was like a figure of some kind crouching next to her while she was looking at it, and she kind of stumbles away from it and the laptop at the same time. Well, it's not even the last note. It's like the third couplet. It's like happy birthday. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that I don't think was necessary. She does feed the cat, like, I think at least twice before this happens. Right. Yes, Doctor Kumar. Yeah. Well, but I don't think it's necessarily something for kudos, if only because the screenwriters would have to know, okay, well, if we put her in lockdown, then we have to write how she escapes. So that's just probably more trouble than they wanted to fuck with. Yeah. Well, I think it only happens the once. I don't think he crops up every like 15 minutes, like, we're having this intervention. A wild Trevor appeared. Well, they put a little bit of window dressing on it because he was supposedly an art history professor. So he's some kind of artist. So him drawing stuff is less incongruous than just like every random person who is crazy, like, ah, scratching everything on the walls, you know. It's good. It's good. Yes. It's almost as if Parker Finn, I think that's the name of the writer director. It's almost as if Parker Finn has secretly been listening to our podcast. It's like, oh man, I got to take freak right out of there. They're absolutely right. Then he crosses out freak and writes in fanatic. Wait, no, morbid fanatic. A single epithet, yeah. Well, no, let's be specific. He's her ex. Yeah. So he drops by the hospital sometime after the interview, and he's just like, yeah, there was a, I had a call in the area. I just wanted to stop by and see how you're doing. And she gives him the cold shoulder because, okay, yeah, torchbearer, get the hell out of here. And then now she's dropping by his place because he has access to police records, basically. Yeah, well, I guess if she just saw something live. Jackson, I believe, was the name. I'm not possessed, I'm cursed. Yeah, no, the cop ex-boyfriend says, like, I thought this was like a like some kind of suicide cult or blackmail thing. He doesn't say mass hysteria. And he would be the one. Right. And her sister became a yuppie. Right, exactly. This is followed by what I referenced earlier, where it's an instance of a trailer having ruined something. Because when I watched the trailer, there's a jump scare, basically. Rose gets in her car after leaving her sister's porch. Then her sister opens the front door back up and just sort of walks determinedly, but not like running or anything, but just power walking up to the door and then like knocks on the window. And then you expect, or I did, if you've seen enough of these movies, I guess, the next thing is her head's gonna bash through the window or something. And instead, her head, like, swings down on a bent neck like a pendulum. And I was really taken with that when I saw it in the trailer the first couple of times. I think I'm like, ooh, that's neat. That played with my expectations. No smashed window here. But then, yeah, it completely ruined it for the movie. I got no impact at all. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You really didn't like that guy. They had one of these chains in Brazil at one point. Cool. Smile too, Rio. You see, that part was a good line. What I don't like is what's in the immediate vicinity of that, which is when he says something to the effect of, "This thing feeds on trauma." It's can't that be subtext? Isn't about trauma. I mean, my God, I'm not saying you can't do the trauma thing anymore, but it's already right there. You don't need to make it text. Maybe a soft 5.5. No. Right. Right. And he just comes completely unglued. He looks like he's about to rip his own arm off. Right, just the one. And the smile comes out. Well, it just, basically, It just kind of ends. I mean, that Rose, once she hears her psychiatrist's voice on the phone, is like, oh shit. And once it does not have a poker face, like you've been saying. So she just kind of lets the phone drop out of her hands, and the demon's like, okay, jig's up. The smile slowly unfurls on the actress's face, and then it's here. It's definitely here now that that happens. And it's just like, I'm coming for you soon, Rose. Brr. Yeah. Yes. Yep. Like, no, Rose, you shouldn't go. I gotta call somebody. Just stay here. And then she peels out. She has come to the conclusion, and you alluded to this earlier, that she's gotta get herself alone so that the monster, the entity, can't make the leap. And this is gonna, I mean, I think you know what I'm gonna say for recommendations. So I'll bring it up post break. Note for fucking note. It's the same thing. Right. So she's like, okay, I gotta get this thing alone. So she's gonna drive out to the ramshackle old rundown family home. She gets a call from Officer Fuckboy, who is trying to get her to tell him where she's going, and she's like, nah, hangs up. And then she goes in there and she's got a fucking lantern and she's just walking around in the dark, just wading through her own trauma, essentially. Right, we get the flashback to when she found her mom, and as we discover, she didn't find her mom dead. Her mom was calling out to her for help because she was like in the midst of overdosing. And it's like, Rose, honey, you gotta call somebody. And we heard actually a little bit of this earlier on. Rose has some auditory hallucinations when she's alone in her own house. She hears like her mom calling to her from the hallway or something. Yeah, wrong one. Right. Well, yeah, but the flip side of it is the trope of I gotta confront my trauma. So, right, so this is why. She's going to confront her trauma and get catharsis. So she has this flashback, and then she talks to her mom. Like, her mom appears. Right. Right. Yeah, no, they have this long conversation about how could you let me die? I needed your help. And Rose says, because you were a monster and I was a child, and I know that's not fair, but I was scared, and so on and so forth. Basically, unpacking all of the trauma, and then mom turns into the witch from Blair Witch. Well, no, it's too big to be the Left 4 Dead witch.
Yeah, sure.
Right. Right. Well, they at that point, I mean, the movie is nearly 2 hours long, which for this genre is pushing it, and particularly when it had all that on-screen thread pulling, kind of padding out the runtime, they probably didn't want to do like a 5-minute scene where Rose slowly figures out, wait, there's something wrong here. So they just had to deploy it all at once. Like, this has got to happen in 2 pages, man. 2 script pages, that's it. No, it would have been 85 minutes plus credits. Yeah. So she sort of backs away and throws open the door out of his place and runs out into her family's front yard. Like she runs out into the front yard of the decrepit old family home and she discovers that it was all a trick. The house is not burning down. Officer Fuckboy has somehow, I guess, finally deployed his fucking detective skills. It's like, where did she grow up? I have to go to her. And so she flips out because she can no longer execute her I'm gonna be alone with it plan. And yeah, she goes back in, and the creature emerges once again. And I'll just unpack all this after the break. But suffice to say, the creature grabs her and then climbs inside her mouth. And this is the takeover process. We're seeing it live now for the first time. And the cop eventually breaks down the door and he finds Rose, or the thing that looks like Rose, having just finished dumped a can of kerosene or gas or whatever on herself. And then she turns around and strikes a match, got the rictus grin on, and she tortures herself. And we see this mostly just in flickering light on his face. Right.
Yesterday, a patient in your care died brutally in front of you.
I need to find an explanation for what happened.
It's smiling at me. It's smiling at me.
You're going to die! You're going to die!
Hello, listeners. It's Jim, here as always during the break to tell you some stuff you probably already know. Please follow us on Twitter at Shock Doctors Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/shockdoctorspod, or check us out on Apple Podcasts. The podcast is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got an idea for a movie you'd like us to check out, feel free to send us a DM on social media or email us at shockdoctorspod@gmail.com. And now, back to the show.
I found 20 cases involving 19 victims with a direct line linking them all together.
You see
said only 19.
Why is it that everybody else who's seen it is dead and you're alive? I've seen it too.
You?
Get away from me!
How long between each victim's death?
None of them survived longer than a week.
Rose! Today's my fourth day.
I am not gonna keep running.
I have to face it.
And we are back. So let me break down a series of conflicted feelings about the whole climax. Because it was a bit of a roller coaster in terms of how I felt about it. It starts out with very bog standard, like, hero comes to grips with their trauma, and because it's a horror movie, they literally come to grips with it, and then physically vanquish it. Right. And so it made me awfully angry at first, because she just like, haha, I'm gonna hit you with a lantern, and I win now. Like, what? Why didn't any of the other 20 fucking people try that first? Everybody else just... 19 people gave up, and one guy's like, well, I'm not gonna kill it. I'm gonna kill an innocent bystander and make a second innocent bystander watch. Hit with fire. So that would have been terrible, and so I guess the fact that it doesn't end with that is better, but at the same time it necessitates, yeah, the stuff with the X is really rushed, and I hate a bait and switch too, and that coupled with the fact that the giant mom witch woman creature thing just looks kind of silly, I just kind of wish we had dispensed with it altogether. Okay, so that comes a little bit later, and I was going to get to that. The only thing from the initial false climax that I like, and this is in the trailer too, is just the look of the creature after she's torched it, like it's scrabbling around and it's completely on fire. It's a relatively arresting image. I liked the look of that. She does say you're not real, which is almost as bad, but I agree. It could have been worse if they had done that. A while, yeah. Yeah. Right. This is very true. Now, during the actual climax, when she's stuck back in there with the thing again, once again, at first, the creature looks stupid. But you're absolutely right. When it tears off the, like, pseudo-mom skin, it's just, like, a bare, muscled skull, but then it's got, like, a series of jaws, teeth and all. Like, it's got multiple sort of mouths, and that's grody. I mean, that's pretty rad. And then there's a... I don't want to call it a two-shot, because that's kind of silly, but it's a shot from the side of the creature sort of crouched down in front of Rose, and it's pulling her mouth open like unhinged snake jaw way. And it was shot from exactly the right distance away, because I know that if we had been closer to Rose's weird assimilate stretch mouth, it would have looked as dumb as it does in Assimilate or any other similar movie like that. So that was good. And just the fact that it's, yeah, climbing into her mouth again, that's kind of rad. So yeah, it's just, you know, a little bit of an up and down there. A lot of dumb, a couple of good things. Maybe they should have just cut down this whole process. Right. And I swear to, if I saw it once, I saw it at least half a dozen times, where instead of like cutting from one person to another, the camera constantly has to swivel around in a semicircle. It just happened constantly, and I never liked it. Yeah. Yeah. The director's name is David Robert Mitchell, is that right? Arthur Lee Allen is his name. He needs to do another horror movie. Well, he did one feature before It Follows, I think. So I think he's got three total, but it's like neither of the other two is a horror movie. I mean, Under the Silver Lake has some weird stuff in it, I'm pretty sure. I haven't actually watched it. But you talking about how expeditiously he dispenses with exposition, I'm like, yeah, he does. He's pretty good at this. Like, let's get some more of that. You just loathed him. It's 4 to 7 days, I think. Yeah, I mean, I guess I get the rationale for going with an irregular timeline just to make it, number one, not to make it feel too safe on days leading up to the seventh day. And also, if the rules are too rigid, maybe it feels silly. But on the other hand, you're making a movie about an evil smile. You know, just embrace the absurdity. Like, just, yeah, fuck it, 7 days, or, you know, four, just pick one. four business days. Mm-hmm. This isn't Nom, this is bowling. There are rules. And, I mean, we haven't even touched on some of the more, like, run-of-the-mill silly shit. Like, there's a lot of upside-down copter or plane shit. Ugh. Shit is topsy-turvy. Well, yeah, there's... Right between the eyes. Yeah. Well, and the fucking opening credits shot of Candyman, the remake that we talked about, you know, a year ago or whenever it was exactly. That's an upside down skyline where the skyscrapers are going up into the clouds. So it looks like there are skyscrapers emerging from like fog. And that looks awesome. Oh, yeah. That's right. Just, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. It's a little dumber in Truth or Dare, but you're right. I did get, and this is weird because the scene overall is dumb as a box of rocks, but I did get a little tickle in the back of my neck when the psychiatrist turns out not to be the psychiatrist. And I think it's purely because the actress playing the psychiatrist is pretty good. I can't think of the actress's name, but she played Calamity Jane on Deadwood. She's been in some other stuff. Yeah, and so she's good. And when I said the smile unfurls, that's the word I used earlier, and it's that's really the word for it here. It's a very slow sort of just, I didn't know you could make a smile take that long to emerge. No. Yeah. Right. Robin Weigert is the actress's name. I wanted to get that because she acquits herself possibly as well as anybody in the movie. Although, the lead actress, did you know she's Kevin Bacon's kid? Yeah, I don't know how her name is pronounced, but it's S-O-S-I-E, so Sosi, I guess, maybe, Bacon. Kevin Bacon and Kira Sedgwick's kid. And she's pretty good. I mean, she's not bad or anything. Yeah. Well, happy to do it. But anyway, yeah, the psychiatrist, Ms. Weigert, is definitely, just by virtue of the smile alone, probably the best performance in the movie. Yeah, that's probably fair to say. So anyway, in terms of recommendations, now I can deploy my my bile. So here's the part where I recommend Fallen again, because how could I not? So I would say look out for spoilers for Fallen, but number one, I've spoiled Fallen already like two or three times. Number two, I've spoiled Fallen by saying it's exactly like how this movie ends. So cat's out of the bag. But anyway, yeah, that movie, the climax of Fallen is Denzel Washington is trying to defeat an evil spirit that hops from person to person by luring it out into the middle of nowhere so it can't jump to somebody else. In a deserted cabin, it's the same fucking thing. Now, granted, he has to involve another living person because the direct mechanics of how the creature, the spirit, jumps from person to person are a little different. So, whereas in this movie, physically, corporeally, Rose is alone the whole time, or is trying to be. In Fallen, Denzel Washington has to lure John Goodman, who plays his partner and is carrying around the demon, out so he can kill both of them. That's the only way he can kill the demon, at least in theory. And again, spoilers for Fallen, like Smile, it doesn't work. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Fallen, just even setting aside my own personal attachment to that movie and the fact that I first watched it with my dad when I was like 12 or 13, and so that's all tied up in it, and that's why part of the reason why I like it so much. It is just demonstrably a better film. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's death. Yeah, it's death. Yeah. So, I'm gonna recommend, not for the first time, probably not for the last time, I'm gonna recommend Fallen. It's not, like so many of my recommendations of late, it's not really a horror movie. It's definitely a 90s mystery thriller, right? But it's good stuff. In the same vein, again, these are going to be all movies we've already talked about, but I was reminded a little bit of The Empty Man, because that's that same kind of thing, at least in terms of being a supernatural cop procedural, even if what the cop is investigating is not really similar in that movie. Probably. I mean, it makes perfect sense. So that's, I liked that well enough. Although I've heard some talk about how, like, it got taken off of HBO Max like some other stuff, and it also didn't have a physical release. So maybe that movie fell down the fucking black hole of Warner Brothers Discovery. I don't know. Yeah, but if it's still out there, that's pretty good. And, oh, yeah, so much better. Right. Yes. And then, you know, we talked about It Follows. It Follows is great. Just another creature pretending to look like people hopping from person to person, sort of a thing. And The Ring, what the fuck? You know, this. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, don't tell me too much. I haven't watched it. Yeah, for reasons passing understanding, I have seen the Soderbergh Solaris, but I have not yet watched the Tarkovsky one. I'm behind on my Tarkovsky. Didn't stand a chance. Right. Yeah.
Well,
I guess now that we've allowed the creature to torch itself, we can leave it alone in the crumbling house. But until next time, I'm Jim Smith, and we are the Shock Doctors. We'll see you later.
As always, we have some acknowledgments. Our music was composed by Will Connor. Audio for the bumpers was taken from Smile Official Trailer 2022 Movie, uploaded by Paramount Pictures. All rights reserved. Our next episode will be up on Sunday, October 30th, and for our Halloween episode, we will be discussing what else? Halloween Ends. See you then.